Danger is double, pleasures are few, where the rain never falls and the sun never shines. It's dark as a dungeon, way down in the mines.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic is cobalt mining.
Yeah.
I had to make sure to enunciate so I didn't say cobalt. You know, yeah. Like we dropped that T. So I had to make it a hard T.
That's a good everyone. Point. I'm definitely going to say cobalt.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Hey, have you ever seen the 1995 film Congo or ever even heard of it?
Yes, I thought I had. But then when you were like saying who the actors were, I was like, maybe I have not seen that film.
Oh, it's a stacked cast. Tim Curry is in it. Laura Linney is in it. Ernie Hudson is in it.
I can't imagine how young Laura Linney was then, too.
It was one of, I think it was one of the first movies I ever saw her in. And she's like a bad, you know, A double.
Yes.
In this movie. Like,
can you believe that was 30 years ago? Yeah.
She's got this big, like, diamond laser gun, and she's just, like, lasering these gorillas left and right.
What?
Yeah.
Don't tell me.
But, no, they're, like, evil
gorillas.
Gorillas. Okay. Yeah, they're bad gorillas. And Ernie Hudson, I'm pretty sure I'm right on this. He says this is his favorite part he's played. Like, in, like, he's had the most fun, and this was a good movie. But it's based on a Michael Crichton book who wrote Jurassic Park.
Yes.
So when Jurassic Park came out, which was before this, I was like, oh, I'm going to read all of these books. So I read this book. But basically, you know, lots of competing interests end up in this, you know, expedition to the Congo rainforest. Mm-hmm. And one of the interests is a primatologist who's got sign language speaking gorilla that he's returning to home. But anyway, they end up, you know, finding ultimately, you know, King Solomon's lost diamond mine, and it's guarded by these like man killing gorillas. So the bad gorillas that like kill people is the one that she's
lasering.
I mean,
but are they bad? Come on. Like, who are the ones who are thieving?
Well, apparently
stealing from the Congo.
That's true. But apparently in the book, there's like some
monster element.
Yeah. Like, human gorilla hybrid, like
gotcha.
There's some interspecies like breeding going.
Little spoiler there. I like that.
Yeah, but anyway, I thought of that because cobalt mining primarily occurs in the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC.
Yes.
So this is a request from my cousin James. I've mentioned him on the podcast before. He's really into like cars, and he like drives old Cadillacs, like finds old Cadillacs online and drives them. And so we were, you know, talking about electric vehicles, and he mentioned this, and I had never even heard of it before. And this was like, it was either last summer or two summers ago, so I'm a bit behind
curve
on this. But yeah,
we're getting around to it.
Better late than never.
Yes, for sure.
But cobalt mining is part of what some scholars call the green energy conundrum, which is when the push to go green to reduce carbon emissions creates or is associated with other justice problems. And we've talked about climate change and its relations to, you know, fossil fuel in a number of other episodes. But basically, 75% of greenhouse gas emissions come from the energy sector. And so to reduce climate change, the move away from fossil fuel has been a major objective. And electric vehicles, or EV, have been one of the areas of focus in decarbonizing.
Yes.
But the conundrum or the challenge in going green here are, you know, questions about the mining process of minerals used in EV batteries, such as lithium and particularly cobalt. And there are serious problems related to the environmental and social costs of extracting cobalt.
I think I drove one of those. Chevy Cobalt.
Yeah.
That's a car. I remember.
Cobalt, nice compact car produced in the mid-2000s.
Are they still in production?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because I was looking this up, like, I think Chevy made a cobalt. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think they're made anymore. Replaced by another one.
Yes.
But yeah. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a four-door Chevrolet cobalt.
cobalt.
Yeah, but more specifically, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, cobalt today, which cobalt is a mineral. Mm-hmm. And cobalt is, from the Wikipedia page, a ferromagnetic metal with a specific gravity of 8.9. The Curie temperature is 1,115 degrees Celsius, and the magnetic moment is 1.6 to 1.7 Bohr magnetons per atom. Metallic cobalt occurs as two crystallographic structures. The ideal transition temperature between the HCP and FCC structure is 450 degrees Celsius, but in practice, the energy difference between them is so small that random intergrowth of the two is quite common. Got it?
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you saying something? You lost me at from the Wikipedia page. Oh. So, student, are you citing a Wikipedia page?
Well, I mean, it sounds like smart enough that it must be real.
I know. Did you check any of those resources? It does sound like could be real.
I did not. Yeah. But really, cobalt is a silvery blue metal, and it's an element on the periodic table. And CO is its abbreviation, and its atomic number is 27, which I used to know what that means, but it's been like 225 years since I've had high school chemistry.
Yes, I have a funny story about my high school chemistry class, but I'll save that for another time.
Okay, well,
I'll pull that one out. This episode's already very long, so
yeah.
We'll save that joke.
Yeah. Cobalt's name supposedly comes from the German word kobold, which means goblin, because apparently cobalt ore was a nuisance for 16th century German silver miners. So they called it a goblin ore that kind of got in the way. But that could be apocryphal, as cobalt ore has been used to make blue pigments since antiquity.
Very cool.
Yeah, cobalt has been used to tint glass and ceramics a rich color of blue, going all the way back to 1500 BC Egypt. And that's the oldest cobalt colored glass that's been discovered. So 1500 BC.
Yeah, that's very cool.
30 years ago, cobalt was just a byproduct of copper mining, but now it is coveted for its use in rechargeable batteries.
Right.
And rechargeable batteries are charged and discharged by the flow of lithium ions between the anode, which is positively charged, and the cathode, negatively charged. So if you're trying to jump your battery, the red is the anode positive and black is the negative cathode.
I like watching reels of people zapping themselves with batteries in my spare time.
I've not seen one, but fun. I would love to watch one.
You would
one.
Love them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're good.
So cobalt is put in the cathode, and it's important because it keeps batteries from overheating and catching on fire, and also extends the life of the battery. So cobalt basically stabilizes rechargeable batteries and gives them longer life. In an EV battery, electric vehicle battery needs about 13 to 27 pounds of cobalt. But cobalt's also used in most rechargeable batteries for phones, tablets, laptops, etc. And the Department of Defense actually uses it in drones and aircrafts, and President Biden called the lack of cobalt or the lack of access to cobalt a national security threat.
Yeah.
And the demand for cobalt at current pacing is expected to quadruple by 2030.
Wow. Mm-hmm. We should have given a content warning at the beginning that this was a science episode or too sciencey, or maybe a trigger warning that this was science was
trigger
about
warning,
to happen.
Science triggers, beware.
Yes.
But we're done with most of the sciencey stuff.
So where does cobalt come from and where do we get it from?
Half of the world's cobalt reserves are in the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC. So they produce about 60 to 70% of the world's cobalt supply. And no other country in the world has more than 10% of the world's cobalt reserves. So DRC is basically the only country on the planet that can cover our demand for cobalt.
Yeah.
And DRC is a large country in central sub-Saharan Africa, and it's named for the Congo rainforest, which is the second largest rainforest on the planet behind the Amazon, as well as the Congo River that flows through it, which is the deepest river in the world. But DRC is also one of the poorest countries in the world. It has only a 6% electrification rate. So I assume that means only 6% of houses or 6% of people have electricity. And historically, it's been a war-torn and violent place due in large measure to generations of colonialism. Europeans have been ransacking and pillaging the country for centuries, especially its vast mineral resources. And for a long time, Belgium had almost exclusive control of DRC minerals and got very rich from them. In mineral extraction accounts for 90% of the country's exports and is a core element of the economy.
Yeah, so King Leopold is the guy here who is the villain. So we
Belgium King?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we don't really have a lot of time to talk about the scramble for Africa, but mm-hmm. that's what was happening in the 1800s as seven Western European nations basically broke up Africa on a map and said, you get this, you get this, you get mm-hmm. this. And so King Leopold and Belgium took the Congo. And he's very infamous for crimes against humanity. Mm-hmm. So he tortured, kidnapped the native population, mm-hmm. first for ivory and then for rubber. And mm-hmm. he's famous for amputating the hands of men, mm-hmm. women, and children when they weren't making the rubber quota. Mm-hmm. And he's also famous for in all the bad ways, right? Yeah. And he was actually so bad that they made him relinquish control and the rest of the colonizing mm-hmm. countries said, you can't do that, bro. Like that's how bad he was.
Must have been really bad. The yeah. other colonizers were like, too far, yes. Leo, too far. Yeah.
But there's a great book on this, and mm-hmm. I'll actually link to it because now it's open access. Mm. So I'll link to it in the show notes. But yeah, mm-hmm. generations of colonialism still experiencing violence mm-hmm. that resulted from that. And we do have refugees, mm-hmm. Congolese refugees, in our community here mm-hmm. in Harrisonburg.
Okay, wow. Yeah, and, you know, again, one of the main reasons for this has been to, you know, pillage the minerals. And it's estimated that the Copper Belt area in the southern province of DRC has the highest cobalt concentrations in the world. And actually, a lot of high concentrations of the highest economically valued cobalt is not buried deep. In the Earth's surface. It's actually quite close to the surface, so it can be extracted manually with picks and shovels.
Yes.
In refineries in other parts of the world, refine the cobalt ore mined in the DRC, so miners dig the ore and then export it to refineries around the world, but mostly China.
Yep.
And basically, a big part of what's going on in the DRC is called artisanal and small-scale mining, ASM, but I'm just going to call it artisanal mining. So instead of like big corporate mechanized mining projects, artisanal mining is just miners or people digging cobalt ore on their own.
Yeah.
So the Congolese wars in the 90s made it difficult for foreign industrial mines. So that really helped kind of fuel the artisanal mining movement. And about 15 to 30% of cobalt comes from artisanal miners in the DRC who hand dig ores. But also you do have these big industrial mining projects and a lot of artisanal workers are kind of involved in the peripheral of these industrial mines, like scrounging
right.
You know, cobalt from mining sites. And I hinted at this before, but China currently dominates the mining in the DRC with 80% of industrial copper cobalt mining industries being China owned. And they have 80% of the refined cobalt market and half of the rechargeable battery market in the world.
Yeah.
But one of the big problems is these artisanal miners are just basically people going up and digging up this ore on their own, transporting it and then selling it.
Yes.
And these guys are called Clausies.
Well, I listened
which is
to
French
it and
for diggers.
Yeah, it sounded mm-hmm. like cruises. Mm.
It's kind of like the
the cruise.
The French thing, yeah.
And then the R at the end is silent. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
But you heard me listening to this the other day, and you said it sounded like something very,
very vulgar.
So use your
I
imagination.
Was like, what are you
listeners?
Listening to? And then when I listened to them saying mm-hmm. that word, it didn't sound what I heard, like what I heard coming out of your office.
Well, who knows?
I mean,
you know, French, I tried to speak it the best.
I think this was a native French speaker, mm-hmm. so we're good. Yeah, but it did sound vulgar. Mm. Yes. Sorry, French listeners. I don't think there are any, but just in case.
But anyway, I hope not, because I was pretty mean to our French listeners for a long time there earlier.
That's right.
But anyway, here's a quote from a 2019 study interviewing some of these miners describing what this process is like. Artisanal miners will usually dig 5 to 15 meter deep pits. At the bottom of the shaft, they will dig a quote-unquote living room where people sit, and then galleries going horizontally where they extract the ore in teams of 4 to 5 men. More simply cannot fit inside the mine. It takes months of back-breaking work to build the shaft to reach the ore, at least 4 or 8 weeks. Usually the ore is sorted and washed by women and children at the outskirts of the mining site. Then it is sold to traders or directly to buying houses, mainly owned by foreigners. The second type of mining is much less organized. It's where some men, but mostly women and children, collect and dig for cobalt in discarded tailings and slurry close to or even on large-scale mining or industrial sites.
Yes, and I did look at some pictures because I didn't listen to the whole thing. but I will link to it in the show notes. It's an NPR episode of Fresh Air with Terry Gross, and she's speaking to somebody who wrote a book about this specific process. And so there were lots of pictures, and it looked horrific. Does not sound great.
Hard work. I think I mentioned him later on, who wrote the Red Cobalt or something like that's the name of the book.
Right.
But mining in general is hard work.
Yes.
I'm a coal miner's daughter. I think I've mentioned it on here before. My daddy was a coal miner, and he had machines and equipment, and it was hard enough. And here, this is mostly hand dug with picks and shovels.
Right.
And then they have to transport the ore to sellers on their back or on their bicycle, so it's rough for sure. But it's also dangerous. Miners experience accidents, exposures to toxin, exploitation, and violence. And first of all, cobalt is toxic to touch and breathe. And these miners are digging it by hand, oftentimes with no gloves, mask, or safety equipment. And also, like you mentioned, we kind of like to think about mines as like these far-off, isolated sites way out in the middle of nowhere. But no, these mining pits are like dug in the middle of town, like right by where people live. There aren't any bathrooms or drinking water down in these mines, so conditions can get really dirty and unsanitary.
Right.
And frequently kids are working here too.
Yeah.
Collapses and death from collapses are not uncommon. There aren't any structural support. These are just kind of like open pits in tunnels. Like I can remember one time when I was a kid going into a mine with my dad, like, you know, I wasn't operating at the time, but we went in there, and you know, one of the things they'll do is, like, you know, they have these bolts and they'll like shoot up in the ceiling for, you know, structures and support that help the mine from collapsing. And there's obviously none of this here. It's not a formal operation, so tunnels are just dug and redug by hundreds of different miners without coordination or knowledge. And so, especially when it rains during the rainy season, mines frequently collapse. And a couple of quotes I read described it as, quote, imagine turning the clock back centuries, and another quote, the bottom of the cobalt supply chain is a horror show.
Yes.
But I'm kind of getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, so you're going to back up and give us some stats, but I did want to say that it must have been like a part of elementary school growing up in Eastern Kentucky. We were forced to go on an outing to a coal mine.
Yeah.
Terrified. They put us in a car and everything. Like, we went into
Did you go in the mine?
I don't think we were like legally supposed to be there. So yeah. I'm not exactly sure how they got away with it. Maybe it's just because it was the 80s in Eastern Kentucky. I was terrified. So I was like, yeah, I'm never going in a cave, a mine, anything like that. I end up going into caves, of course. But yeah, it was scary.
We went to several strip mine sites on field trips, but we never went
mine. No, we went into them. We didn't. I'm sure we were not very deep from my recollection, but it was enough to be like, nope, thank you. So, okay, give us some stats now.
So it's estimated that 140 to 200,000 people work in artisanal cobalt mines in the DRC. But I read another estimate that that was just stats in one province. So, you know, could be a whole lot more than that. And on average, artisanal miners get paid $10 a day.
Which I think was the cost of the coffee I'm currently drinking.
Yeah.
Like, what privilege, right? I cannot believe $10 a day.
Yeah.
For such dangerous work.
Right. It seems outrageous, but that's actually much higher than most people earn in the DRC. The average daily earning is $1.90. So $10 a day is quite lucrative. So even though it's awful work, there's lots of incentives to keep artisanal mines open and to, you know, keep these miners working, and lots of incentives to work in one. But it's also exploitive. A German study I read estimated that artisanal mining contributed to between 150 to 300 million U.S. dollars worth of cobalt in 1 year.
Oh, my goodness.
But these guys are getting paid $10 a day.
Yeah.
So you've got these artisanal miners basically digging this ore and selling it, and they don't know the full extent of global ore prices, and they don't have the power to negotiate fair prices.
Right.
And child labor is also a major concern. In 2014, Amnesty International estimated that 40,000 children were involved in mineral extraction in the DRC.
Yeah.
And this includes small children who have to go to work with their parents because there's nobody else to watch the kids, and so they end up working alongside them, as I mentioned earlier, usually doing like the easy tasks like washing this toxic poison ore after it's been dug out. It's also profitable for children to work and to help out large families. And sometimes children may be the head of the household. Their parents are dead or, you know, ill, and they have to provide for the family, or they may be young parents themselves. And child labor is a systematic issue in the region because of lax laws and the profit potential. And I think this might be the guy you were referring to earlier. Harvard School of Public Health fellow Siddhartha Kara wrote a book about it called Cobalt Red, and basically likened this to slavery. Mm-hmm. Even though people are getting paid, they have very little choice to do this work if they want to survive. Many homes and towns have been bulldozed to make way for industrial mining. So a lot of people have no other, you know, choice for survival.
Right.
And then, of course, forced labor and trafficking also occurs. Militias and commandos abduct and conscript children as laborers.
Yeah, a wonderful mix. Modern-day slavery, human trafficking, and child labor.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before, it's also toxic and to mine cobalt artisanally. And doesn't that just sound nice?
Like, it does.
Artisanal cheese and wines and breads and hoity-toity.
It makes them sound like artists and not like they're toiling for a living.
It's not that at all. Cobalt is toxic to breathe and to touch. Cobalt exposure affects the heart and the lungs, so breathing it in basically leads to fatal lung disease called hard metal lung.
Yeah.
And I imagine that's kind of similar to like black lung, Appalachian coal miners. Cobalt also affects the blood and thyroid, and it can result in birth defects, neurological development impairment, respiratory disorders, heart and kidney disease, and cancer. And also the DRC is high in uranium. A lot of the uranium used in the Manhattan Project was mined in DRC. So radiation exposure is another hazard on top of all of the hazards of cobalt mining.
Add that to the soupy mix there.
Yeah, and mines are associated with pollution and runoff that gets into the water and the air. So dust from cobalt mining gets in the air and in the water, and that dust contains, you know, toxic cobalt ore and other toxin. And, you know, like, we built a pool last year, and they were just digging a pool. And, like, that just covered the whole house, everything inside and out with the dust for a month. So you can imagine living next to a mine, like, dust, this toxic cobalt dust on everything.
Yeah.
And they're not just being dug in rural, remote areas, but in the middle of places where people live, even in kind of urban, densely packed neighborhoods. There could just be one of these pits in the middle of a bunch of houses where people are living. And this is, you know, again, one of the poorest countries on earth, so people can't get away from these mines, and they're dependent upon the toxic groundwater for drinking, for washing their clothes, and so forth. And there's a correlation between fathers who work in the mines and mothers having miscarriages and babies born with disabilities and deformities, and these health effects are only beginning to be understood. So, for example, a 2019 toxicology study found that cobalt mining was significantly related to levels of cobalt present in subjects' blood and urine. Basically, the researchers found that levels of cobalt in subjects' blood was higher than what regulatory agencies said atmospheric cobalt levels should be to be safe in the workplace.
Yeah.
So, like, do not go above this level of atmospheric cobalt in the workplace or you're in danger. And the cobalt in people's blood and urine was higher than that.
Yeah, that, oh, goodness. Mm-hmm. So is there anything that we can do about this? How do we stop this from happening?
Well, I mean, obviously electronics and phones and such aren't going away anytime soon. And companies have tried to, like, resource or reduce cobalt use, but still indirectly, you just have to rely on Congo mine cobalt because over half of the world's cobalt is there. And for these, you know, structural and exploitative reasons, mines in developed areas of the world are not cost effective. It's safer and it's cheaper to have these diggers in the DRC get it out by hand. I read a story about a cobalt mine potentially opening in Idaho. And in our Idaho episode, we talked about, like, Idaho is mineral rich, one of the only places in the U.S. where cobalt is.
Yeah.
So they were, like, opening this mine, but it basically closed before it even opened because mines are expensive and prospective to begin with. And as the mine was being built, the global price of cobalt dropped.
Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. Wait. What? You were just talking about the increasing demand and use in devices. How could cobalt drop in price?
Yeah, I mean, who really understands economics? I don't at all. But basically,
economists don't even understand.
They just pretend like they do. Yeah. But basically, from what I read, the prices dropped because of a surplus of digital devices that were produced during the pandemic.
Okay.
So, like, everybody was home.
On their smartphones.
And on their phones. And so, like, you know, tech companies were like, okay, let's kick up production. And there's so many of these surplus devices now that, you know, they're not making them at the same pace they were.
Yes.
And then there's also been a demand for electric vehicles globally as well. So there are three major ways to address the problem of problems related to cobalt mining in the DRC. And first would be to formalize the mining economy.
Right.
So instead of it being a free-for-all where anybody can dig wherever they want to, you know, there needs to be standards established and regulation and monitoring. And as part of this, have barriers separating mining sites from residential areas, have entry and exit checkpoints to control access. You mentioned, like, you know, in most places, you can't just like wander onto a mine. If it's an active mine, they're going to be, controlled entry and exit points, office space for medical and emergency personnel and inspectors. And, you know, this seems silly, but have toilets and drinking water on the site and require the use of protective equipment. We can also think about like developing new technology. Obviously, you know, electronics aren't going anywhere, but there's been some speculation about, you know, developing alternative batteries that don't use cobalt. And these alternatives are supposed to be more sustainable, but probably they're really not. And there are still, you know, environmental problems associated with mining other types of minerals.
Sure.
And, you know, potentially this new tech could take 10 years to develop and fully implement, which also leads to this environmental problem shifting. Changing tech leads to new and different environmental problems instead of solving them. But, you know, electric vehicles, even without cobalt, still use rubber tires and lots of other materials used in gas vehicles.
Right.
So finally, we could try to decrease our dependence on vehicles overall. And this potentially would be most applicable in kind of like redesigning urban planning and focusing on, you know, electric public transport and bike lanes and, you know, broad pavement for pedestrians, because currently our cities are largely designed to be vehicle centric. It's about, you know, streets and roads and getting vehicles for them. So the most potential is, you know, urban areas, less reliance on vehicles. Obviously, there are lots of places where using a car is unavoidable.
Right.
But cities particularly have the potential to redesign for less vehicle use.
Yeah, I mean, there are some cities that are almost 100% electric, like Norway, countries. Norway is almost 100% electric right now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, that's all I got. You got anything else?
Well, this was a pick-me-up episode. It sure was.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm thinking, you know, one of your suggestions was about how to, you know, formalizing the mining economy, but you have to have money to pay for things. Mm-hmm. I have an idea who could pay for that.
Spill it.
Belgium. So,
yes,
because of King Leo, he's theirs, he's responsible for approximately the death estimate is 10 million Africans, that he's responsible for the death of 10 million Africans.
Oh, my gosh.
And himself, as well as the country, profited off of that. Mm-hmm. So maybe they should pay reparations and pay for this.
Yeah, I mean, You're right. I didn't want to, you know, go into too much detail, but all of those, like formalizing the mining economy, require resources to do that.
Yes.
And, you know, require laws and regulation and structures and money. So
that's a great idea. Belgium.
Yeah.
I do have one more thing. Congo, like a lot of African countries that are very rich in resources, minerals and others, should be the wealthiest nations in the world.
Yes.
Thank you, colonialism. Mm-hmm. So, anywho, now I'm done.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, we, you know, the world is getting rich from taking this cobalt and these minerals from, you know, African countries.
And it's not benefiting them.
We're paying them $10 a day for 350 million.
Where's the infrastructure? Yeah. Where's their electricity? Where are the benefits from participating in this?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, off the soapbox. what's your spin?
Oh, was that your spin?
Oh, yeah, that was my spin, sorry.
Okay, well, no, that's good. Save me from having to say it.
Okay.
My spin is, danger is double, pleasures are few, where the rain never falls and the sun never shines. It's dark as a dungeon, way down in the mines. So that was a song written in the 1940s by Merle Travis, yes, about coal mining. Mm-hmm. But most famously, Johnny Cash sang it live at Folsom Prison Blues. So I was actually listening to it on the way over here in between offices. And there's another line in the song. It's talking about, like, you know, men in these poor communities get trapped and they, you know, don't have any other choice but to work in the mines. And it basically says, till the stream of your blood runs as black as the coal. And it made me think about, like, you know, cobalt in, you know, the folks' blood there.
The similarities.
Yeah. Another cool thing is, on this album, Live at Folsom Prison, mm-hmm, the song directly after this, Dark as a Dungeon, is How High is the Water, Mama? 4 feet high and rising. And I didn't even realize that till today, but I almost picked that as my spin for our last episode, Hurricane Katrina episode.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was a song that Johnny Cash wrote about kind of like a big flood in Arkansas,
yes,
when he was growing up.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, you said, like, you know, major downer for this episode.
I mean, none of them are happy, let's be honest.
But I kind of really like episodes like this because, yes, it's like really outside of my wheelhouse and I learn so much myself.
Yes.
I mean, it takes a lot of work to prepare an episode like this, but I feel like I really learned a whole lot. I honestly did not know anything about cobalt mining until James said, like, hey, you should do an episode on this.
Thanks for the idea, James.
Mm-hmm. But it's never a bad idea to think about the ways that we can be less reliant on technology. So let's all try as much as we can to unplug, and as my coal mining daddy would say, hitch a ride on the Shoe Leather Express.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries. Check out our website, linked in show notes, to see how you can support our educational programming.